Well, hello and welcome to episode number 50 of the Adoption and Fostering Podcast. Yes, that's episode 50.
Happy birthday to
and
us.
And it's... Yeah.
Happy birthday to us. Happy birthday to us.
And I was...
Happy birthday to us.
And it's our second birthday.
Yay!
And it's our second birthday.
Yeah. October 2016.
I can't believe we've been going 2 years now. Oh, my days.
And they said it wouldn't last.
Well, I mean, to be fair, it's only 2 years, so, you know, it might not. If you are listening, then thank you for listening for all 2 years, because
yes,
we know you
thank
all, you've downloaded every single episode. But anyway, we're not going to dwell on that too much. It has been a lovely 2 years.
It has.
But we've got a job to do.
We have. What's that?
We've got to give information. We've got to provide people with things, and we've got to. I don't know. What is it we do?
I don't know. We're a lifeline, aren't we, for these isolated adopters living in their homes, weeping and sobbing and listening to us prattle on.
Well, do you know, you're not. I don't think you're far off the mark, actually, and I think I've become more aware of that in the last couple of weeks. In fairness.
Why do you say
more
that?
More than ever.
Why?
Oh, I don't know. Just some things that I've been tagged in on Twitter and Facebook and messages I've received. And yeah.
We got an email.
Quite social. We did. We got emails. I've had direct messages. I've had tweets. In fact, I don't think I've ever been that popular on social media, actually, than I have been this last 2 weeks. I'm going to be really honest with you.
Well, I have to say you're starting from a very low base point, though, aren't you? So, you know, your idea of popular and... you know, to raise that above zero, you just need one like, and that's it. You've doubled your popularity.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's excellent. Well, that's good. Good to hear.
Anyway.
Yeah. We'll not get into banter too early because I've got so many banter-tastic things to do.
Well, what I thought we'd do tonight, Mr. Mm-hmm. Coates.
Yes, yes.
Is I thought that we'd turn the tables. So I would go, Jeremy Paxman on your butt, mister.
Cool.
Stop interrupting. I'm the host this evening. Okay, so shut up and talk.
Okay.
Do not speak until spoken to.
Yes,
young man.
Sir. Okay, I'll try that one out.
I've had a long drive in the car tonight, so I'm on the edge.
Oh yeah. Again.
Again. Again. For the 25th time today. Yeah.
At least, yes. So,
we've been banging on about CPV for many, many episodes now.
Have we?
Yeah, we have.
Okay.
And when I say banging on, I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean that, you know, it's something that both you and I and half the adoption population and probably foster carers and probably SGOs and probably kinship carers actually have to deal with on a day-to-day basis.
True.
But we've never really focused in on the research that you and the good old doc did recently, the second piece of research you did. So tonight I'm going to ask you some questions about it.
Excellent.
So tonight's guest is Mr. Al Coates. Welcome, Mr. Al Coates.
Yay! I feel like you should be like Steve Wright and press a button and have cheers. And
exactly, yeah.
I'll see if I can find a button somewhere for the next episode.
Yeah, you'll have to. Yeah. Or just speak to one of the tech team.
Yeah, I don't want to interfere with your Jeremy Paxman-esque kind of approach, but we do have a pre interview, don't we?
Probably more Jeremy Kyle than Jeremy Paxman.
Well, yes, I haven't. Yeah, really don't draw me onto the rocks, please. Don't.
No, okay.
It's too early. It's too early to be drawn
what
onto
were
the
you
rocks.
Saying? I wasn't.
Before I get started, I'd like to play a little interview I did with the good lady Helen Bonick.
So you're making me feel guilty. Every time you mention her name, I feel guilty because I've never been able to do what she wanted me to do. Anyway, that's for after this.
All right, okay. I'll make a mental note.
Yes, we must play that interview because I thought it was really interesting.
It was, and I bumped into her at a Respect conference, and Respect are an organisation that works specifically into domestic violence. But they broadened it out slightly, and they were looking at... Well, they didn't broaden it out slightly. They were just saying, this is... Now we're going to look at adolescent to parent violence, and I blagged myself a speaking slot, which was quite bizarre.
You're a good blagger, aren't you?
Do you know when you arrive at something, you think, oh, Oh, crap, it's me. Oh, I am, you know, I'm the one of the turns. Anyway, so this is a really short interview that I did with Helen, mainly because I couldn't get my technology to work. It would have been longer. Yeah. But it was a great catch-up, and I thought, because actually in 2016, one of the third podcast we had was with Helen Bonick, and it started a ball rolling, and this is, mm-hmm. it would be good to catch up with her. So I shall put that on now, and then we can reflect on what she did say.
So, Helen, it's great to see you.
Good to see you again.
Yes, thank you. It's 2 years since we spoke on the podcast, and you kind of started a ball rolling for, I know, for me and a lot of other people. So can you tell me what's happened in the 2 years? How has the landscape changed?
I think for me there's been lots of changes in the way that I understand what's going on, and some of that's been really triggered by your work that you've been doing with Wendy, thinking about, is this one thing or several things? I think that's a really big theme at the moment that I see people grappling with, if you like, about how do we understand, is there a difference between some children's use of violence and other people's use of violence? Is how do we understand the intent? Mm-hmm. Is this something that children have one or the other? They either have intent or they don't. Is it something that children can flip between? I use a lot of Venn diagrams in the way that I think about issues. So for me, I think I prefer to think about it in that way, that there will be some children who... we're seeing so many different factors now that for me, is it that children with... experience domestic violence are also using violence? Is it children with autism are also using violence? Is it children who have this, those, or is it that there are many children that use violence and they have all these characteristics? Yeah. How are we understanding it? And within that, what are the overlaps? That there's very rarely one issue in isolation, and sometimes many, many issues piled on and on and on. And then you think, well, no wonder you're using violence because you've got all this to contend with. So I think there's a really interesting discussion going on about intent, and about also thinking about today the sessions, how we understand autism, particularly within that, because of issues about communication and how children are using behaviour, what that behaviour is about. So that's one kind of issue. There's another issue for me that is interesting, which is about the way we are chopping up our understanding of violence within the family. So we've thought about it as being very young children, and we interpret the toddler's behaviour in one way. And then when primary age children are using violence, we understand it in a different way. And then we kind of got a cut off at 13 and adolescence. So we talk about adolescence rather than children. And then we talk about young people. And, and then we haven't really thought about what happens when we stop working with families because the young person is 18 or perhaps 25. What happens to those young people? What's the link between those people and adults that are using violence? Is it the same people or different?
Yeah.
And that's, people are saying, actually, we're understanding all this wrong. We're chopping it up wrong. We should be not chopping it horizontally, if you like, but understanding that, finding a different way of conceptualizing life course of violence. How can we help children much, much earlier on, so that the violence and aggression doesn't become embedded, and we don't get patterns of behaviour that are much more hard to shift. So that it's a different understanding of how we respond to and how we understand violence. So that's another issue, if you like, about looking at the life course as a whole.
What about, we are short for time, aren't we? Because I've got to speak in 5 minutes. But one of the questions, what do you think of the... Has the conversation around it changed? Are different people interested?
I think we have to say that through the work of lots of people, that there is much more communication, much more conversation, that it's a topic that is of interest to a lot of people.
Right.
And this morning we've heard about what the police crime commissioner is doing here. I'm going to conferences where there are people from a huge range of agencies, and this is a conversation that's been had.
Sorry.
Put my teeth in. Is being had across the board,
mm-hmm.
and there is much more talk about it. hopefully that also leads into more provision and support for families. But I think that still needs to be worked into action, because at the same time as we're talking about it, there's all the cuts to services. And that's the disappointing bit. But we do hear about people being really creative and really imaginative in the way they're delivering support.
And tell me what you're doing, because you're nearly finished.
So I'm coming really to the end of writing a book, which is a practice guide for practitioners.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping to have the first draft finished within the next few weeks, if I can persuade myself to stop tweaking it every 2 minutes. and of course, it will need lots of more professional tweaking, but I'm really glad to have reached this point. And this, it is a kind of step-by-step guide for people who have been saying to me for years, we know about this, but we just don't know what to do. So tell us what to do. What do you do when it all kicks off? How do you understand? How do you support a young person? How do you support parents?
That's great. And I really wish we could have talked longer, but I literally have to speak in 3 minutes
and
to 150
people.
And
I'm going to run along and hear you.
As long as I get there before I start speaking, I'll be fine.
Just remember to disconnect, I think.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, thank you very much, and we'll have a proper chat soon.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Good to talk to you.
Bye-bye.
So there we go, that's Alan Bonnick.
I've never met her, and I wasn't involved in that episode 3, because you interviewed her, didn't you?
That's true, yes.
So I've never actually spoken to her, only virtually on social media. On Tinterweb, yeah.
Cool.
But it's just, I think it's interesting, because she picked this all up before it became a thing.
Yes. She's been kind of shouting this quite loudly for a long time. She's got a great website, Holes in the Wall, hasn't she? That was a focal point for a lot of people.
I'm on there.
You do surprise me.
I know. I'm on many things and many lists.
That's not even funny.
It's not. That just shows what sort of a day we've had as I rock back and forward in my chair.
You were saying, but I think she brought out some really interesting points about the idea that we are looking at in a linear form. And I think that tied in with the respect, the idea that what the behaviour in a 4-year-old becomes a 6-year-old, becomes a 9, 11, 14, 20-year-old. And that, I think, is really interesting that we start to see it in that context rather than just put children into silos, that this is adolescent, this is preschool, this is whatever. And the idea of her putting together some good practice guidance, which is multidisciplinary, is really, really encouraging.
Yeah.
And very necessary.
Extremely.
Because I think what is out there is very, it feels very dated to me, to my ears, but that's probably a reflection of all the stuff I've been reading over the last year or two.
I think it's also very inconsistent as to how professionals deal with this. Because there's that kind of, there's always a risk with this kind of thing, isn't there? That it will be seen as the other way around, when in actual fact we have no control as parents over this. It happens, and you know, not in all cases, I know, but you know, most of the time we're not the instigators of this, and that's what's difficult to kind of get your head around as a parent of a child who, you know, who does this, and we don't want to criminalise them, do we? That's the thing.
No, and I think that is part of one of the complex elements of the whole discussion is children live in systems. So you've got children with specific vulnerabilities that live in systems that could, if changed, perhaps provide a safer place for them and perhaps not then precipitate violence and aggression. Mm-hmm. However, then that conversation can just become about, as a parent, you're not doing it right. And that's the thing that we've always got to be cautious that we don't fall into that, which is a really easy trap. And then you get parents feeling quite oppressed and disempowered by engagement with professionals, which is one thing that I see a lot of.
Well, I think we both see it in our own different kind of
corners
of people. And you know, none more so than social media. And you know, it's a tricky one. It is a tricky one.
It is for sure. So are you going to get old Jeremy Paxman on me then?
Jeremy Kyle,
Kyle on me.
Yeah.
You're going to get some burly men to drag me off at halfway through and sort me out.
Your dreams.
Oh, there you go.
dear me. Well, yeah. One of the interesting things was, because I sincerely haven't asked you this, actually, why the change from the CPV to CCVAB definition, acronym, whatever you want to call it? What's brought that on?
Well, that is a huge question. Well, that is a really big question, but it kind of lies quite at the heart of a lot of the issues and the underlying themes. The first one is that child-to-parent violence means that it's about children and parents, which immediately excludes an awful lot of people. So you might say, well, I'm an adoptive parent, so I can be a parent, but it excludes things like aunties, uncles, grandparents who might be kinship carers. It also excludes foster carers. It also excludes, and I think this is probably one of the key things, siblings. When you talk about child-to-parent violence, you're boxing it into a really small cohort of families. And I think that we wanted to broaden it out and say challenging childhood violence and aggressive behaviour, which is it's a mouthful, and I totally get that. But we've danced around it, we pondered it. And when we looked at it, we felt a lot of people, even from the very outset when we were doing the first survey in 2016, there's a lot of people came to us and said, I just don't like that definition. I don't like that group of letters, and they exclude me. So we thought, right, well, we'll broaden it out, and it's not as catchy. But the idea of challenging a violent and aggressive behaviour is probably, I'm happy with that, CVAB, which is a bit rubbish.
So that's what we're calling it, isn't it? CVAB.
I mean, it may not catch on, and it's not for me to worry about that, but I just think it opens up the whole debate about where we're seeing it and how much we're seeing, because we started from an adoption perspective, and that's my world, that's what I know. But it really clearly opened up. So the second survey we did, we asked more families from different communities, and we saw actually there was more than 50% of the families that responded were biological families of children. And so all of a sudden, it dragged Wendy and I out of this adoption world and into a much broader perspective. And if we're talking about a cohort of adopted children, we're talking maybe about 17,000 children in the UK in the sea of 11 million children that we've got at the moment. But we're thinking that if we're talking even 5 or 6 or 10% of children that we currently have, then we're talking about get me maths right, 10 million children. If it's 10%, it's a million children.
Yeah.
11 million, so it's a bit more, but whatever. But all of a sudden, it's an awful lot more families that are affected, the rise of special guardianships, the huge foster care community, there's 70,000 children in foster care. So we just wanted to really pull it away from parents so that the other communities could buy into it, but also allow people to focus beyond adoption and fostering. Does that answer that question?
Yeah, I think it does. And I'm interested to know, just as a bit of a sideline there, is the kind of support for foster carers, or you might not even know this, but is it different to that of adopters other parents?
I was talking to someone yesterday, a family, and they were talking about the violence and aggression they'd experienced as foster carers. I think you're in a different dynamic, because if a child comes in and the violence is really, really, for whatever reason, it's extreme, then you're in a situation where people can say, actually, we can move this child on tonight. We can move this child on now. Mm-hmm. And I tell the story of me being called at 3 a.m. I carry the duty phone for the agency I work for. 3 a.m, I get a phone call from a social worker duty team saying, would you take a child? And you go, 3 a.m, what's the story? And they said, well, they're in the police station at the moment. All right, well, why are they in the police station? Well, they've assaulted the carer. And you want me to put that child into another foster care placement at 3 a.m? That child, who knows why they've assaulted, what the story is, but you just think that the children then, as a foster carer, you'd go, actually, I can't manage this, and the child is moved, which then exacerbates a child's kind of all the issues that a child might have, but it keeps a foster carer safe. So it's an issue that is just moved along, really. It's never resolved.
Okay. So just going back to your definition or your acronym, because we, in this world, we seem to love acronyms, don't we?
We do.
why is there such an emphasis on the definition? Or do you think you covered that?
Well, no,
because you did prattle on a little bit.
No, I did. I think mainly because it's really important. Because when you unpick the definition, there was a paper written by Cottrell in 2002, which was a very specific paper from Canada in relation to adolescent violent aggressive behaviour. Yeah. And that paper came up with the Cottrell definition, which is any behaviour that is, you know, it's violent and aggressive behaviour used to with intent to control or manipulate adults. Mm-hmm. And this idea of intent and control and coercion was another issue that people were really uncomfortable with. And we the second survey that we did with all the 500 responses, approximately a third of people said, it's close, it's okay, we're kind of happy with it. But two-thirds, that's whatever, that works out in numbers, said, we are not happy with that definition at all because we don't see our child has that intent at that moment.
Right. Yeah.
And because there's so much literature is written around that definition, and then there's a second definition by Patterson in 2008, which is a bit broader, and it talks about parents having to live differently or change their behaviour to accommodate their child's behaviour, then we see that it matters to people because there's families who say, look, actually, I don't want you to say that my child is intentionally doing this. So as we scratched away the surface, it kind of then, because what I'm keen, and it's a really good social work principle, is that you say that, well, you are an expert of yourself. You know, it's your life, you're living it, you tell me what's going on. So we gave people that opportunity. We said, well, what do you think is going on with your child? Well, why do you think that they're behaving like this? And people came up with some really broad themes that were you could group into quite distinct patterns. So the one was in relation to a child's sensory issues, children who are feeling kind of overwhelmed, unable to manage their environment, they're unable to manage, you know, their circumstances. Also children who felt overwhelmed, who were dysregulated, unable to control themselves. And that was the greatest majority, really, two-thirds of children who are saying, actually, we're not managing in this situation, we're not coping. And I think speaking oftentimes, I don't know about you, but that is my experience, is that my child is, in that moment, there is intent. In that moment of the mouth starts and the words come out and they're all the attempt is to provoke a reaction or it's to get you away. It's a strategy to get something for a child, isn't it? That idea that behaviour is language. So it's a child saying, for whatever reason, I'm going to strike out at you verbally or physically or, you know, anything in between. I know that probably rings true with your experience. That. So in that moment, there is intent to harm, but it's rarely premeditated. You know, the child wakes up in the morning and says, well, actually, I'm gonna call my dad or this or that or my mum or this or that. So it's children who are struggling to regulate their emotions, children who are find themselves in circumstances where they feel unsafe, and it's a strategy that they're using to either control their environment or to feel safe, to protect themselves, to actually push people away, say, get away from me because I'm freaking out, and if I call you an F and FF, whatever, or I strike you, then you're going to push, then you're going to step away. And that's about a child using that as a really a well-worn strategy for them. And that might be a learned strategy, it might be just be a reaction, a child that's dysregulated, you know, a child that's just freaked out and in a fight, tipped into that fight flight freeze, and they're choosing fight. So that's why I think when we talk about definition, it's really important. I'm aware that I'm just talking now, so if you want to just...
Yeah, you are, you're just rambling on.
I could just ramble on. So I think when we talk about intention, it's really important, because a lot of people say, that really matters to me, how you define my child, because I don't want you to criminalise my child and talk about intent.
Yeah, but that's really hard when you're in the thick of it, but that's another kind of conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, but people even then, I've been in the thick of it, and you kind of go, it's really scary, and it feels dangerous, and you feel vulnerable. But then afterwards, you see a child, I don't know about you, but I see a child who's often really remorseful and pretty freaked out by their own behaviour.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. Yeah, you're right.
Get into these spirals of shame. And so this so this definition that comes from adolescent to parent violence, which is the bulk of the literature and guidance that is out there, is all hung on this adolescent to violent, adolescent, I've forgotten what the words are, adolescent to parent violence, APV. Where, and that is something that people consider to be within developmental norms, because you can, a social worker can say, oh, well, we've all been frustrated as a teenager. We've all been upset as a teenager. We've all felt our parents weren't listening to us as a teenager. And so then it can be framed as, oh, it's just developmentally normal with a little bit more. So a lot of people said, no, this isn't developmentally normal. This is something else. So the definitions are really, to my mind, really key. And that was the conversation when I was at the Respect Conference, is saying, actually, you know, at the beginning of the Respect Conference, the keynote speaker got up and said, this is a crime.
Yeah.
And this, we will not be soft on this crime. And, you know, I was sat with Dr. Wendy, and I was sat between Helen Bonick and Dr. Wendy, and we were both like, we were both like, all three of us were bristling, going, what the flipping blue blazes?
Yeah.
Because, but they're framing it as adolescent to parent violence. And we're saying, you know, from what we know, that that's, there's a huge reduction into adolescence. It's the seven to, it's the not to fives and the five to 12s, 11, 10s. You can look at all that, but that's a thing for a different day, I guess. I'm prattling, sorry.
You are, So, so, and I mean, you know, we see it every day, what everyone wants as solutions and strategies of how to deal with it. So what's your findings in terms of that sort of thing?
Well, that's a really difficult question. And I guess I've been out and about doing lots of talks. I was out doing some yesterday with different professionals and parents and carers. And I think the reality is that we're looking at, there is no one solution. I think that I've come to the conclusion that actually every help should be context specific. So what works for me doesn't work for you. There might be elements of what works for me works for you. So you need to go into someone's house. And I think this is where the conversations get really delicate, because you need to look at adults and say, right, do you understand what's going on with your child? So that idea of, are you an expert in your child? And oftentimes people are. But what interplays is that, do you know what's going on inside of you? So people are exhausted, frightened, freaked out, suffering maybe anxiety, depression. And that impacts on their capacity to parent. But if you go in there and saying, oh, you're parenting wrong, you're going to, you can't just go in there and trash people. So there's a lot of work to do in relation to building up the confidence of parents, empowering them, giving them tools, equipping them. I went to the Adoption UK in York, at the end of it, a woman came up to me and she said, I want to thank you so much. And this is not a story about someone thanking me, but she said, but actually it is. Thank you. Yeah. And she said, because I'd said in my, one of my things that I do is distraction with my, if things start to unravel, I'll reward my child, or I'll give her a really positive choice between, you know, do you want a hot chocolate? Chocolate or sprinkles? Cream or sprinkles? And she goes, oh, I do that all the time, but I feel so bad. And I was going, well, you don't feel bad. You are actually taking control. You're not, but you may be, you, to the outside world, you might be perceived as being a permissive parent. Then, but you are actually taking control of an environment and you are choosing the best option. So there's a touch of NVR in that. There's a touch of pace in that. There's a touch of... And I think it's equipping. But I don't know what training have you had in relation to violent, aggressive behaviour?
Big fat zero. We had an introduction to NVR and that's about it. So we just find our way through it. Because actually, I think you either... are able to adjust, whatever I say here is going to sound wrong, but for us, we've really learned as we go. For the simple fact that I refuse point blank to go on any parenting courses, because I think they're not a waste of time, but for me, I'm just not sure I would get very much out of them. I would get a lot out of NVR training, I have to be honest. However, that opportunity has not come up.
It's expensive and it's very limited.
But that's really all I can think of that would actually help us in any way. So what I do is I try and research as much on MVR as possible. You know, we did that interview with
Sarah Fisher.
Yeah. And that was one of the reasons I was keen to get her on. But I do a lot of kind of my own research and stuff like that to find out what the best way is. And for the majority of the time, it does work. It really does.
Yeah.
But we are only human. And this is the thing. Uh-huh. So, you know, you just referred to that lady when you went to speak at York. I get that completely, because sometimes it's just not possible to, you know, you're just not in that frame of mind mm-hmm. yourself. You had a hard day with the other ones, and, you know, the dog's playing up and the cat's lost an eye and, you know, the gas bill's come in, and you just think, seriously, why, you know, and you're just not in that frame of mind. So it does, you know, and anybody who feels bad about that should really slap themselves around the face, if not have someone else do it for them, because, you know, we're only human at the end of the day. So we can't stop it every time.
No.
But the same as you, you know, distraction techniques and kind of trying to find a way around it rather than plowing through it, so that you're not in the position where, you know, you're having the rubbish crap beat out of you, and, you know, you're kind of having to restrain a child that you really just want to hug rather than restrain. Mm-hmm. So
What you've described is what an awful lot of people experience, and it's interesting you talked about parenting courses, but we give people at the end of the survey an opportunity to write whatever they wanted, you know, comments. Mm. And a lot of people said, please don't send us on more parenting courses.
Yeah.
Because they're just not, they don't cut the mustard.
No, they don't. They really don't.
And they're good in and of themselves, but actually, so that I think that's why I've come to this idea that what we need is someone to come into your house and my house, someone who actually knows their stuff and says, 50% of what you're doing is good, 25% mm-hmm. you could improve a bit, 10% you're mad as mad can be, and you're making it worse, but someone who you respect. And I was talking to someone about this recently, about actually then this comes back down to social care training. And so you know, what are the models of parenting that we use? We've got permissive parenting, we've got authoritative parenting, and we've got authoritarian parenting. And those are the three models that are kind of academically researched. So permissive is parents who just let the kids do whatever.
Yeah.
Or you've got authoritarian parents, which are parents who just make their children do exactly what they're told. Mm-hmm. And then in between, you've got this authoritative, which is probably what most people are, where you go, well, actually, these are the boundaries, but if you can give me a good reason not to use them, then I'll not use them. It's kind of negotiation, but the bottom line is I'm mum and dad, and I say what happens. Therapeutic parenting inhabits this area that is really murky, because you could come in and you could look at my parenting and it's wholly permissive.
Yeah.
Right? Because I avoid every conflict wherever I can.
I've witnessed that.
You have witnessed that.
I have.
Yeah, and I think a lot of parents who experience violence and aggression do that. They avoid conflict, which is the wise, right thing to do.
Yeah.
However, if you're a social worker coming in or a other professional coming in and going, why don't you need to put down the law here?
Yeah.
And you go, well, if I put down the law at 9 o'clock at night, we'll be still putting it down at midnight.
Yeah. And I'll have bruises and, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. So I'm using a therapeutic model. Well, what do you mean by therapeutic? Well, I'm using PACE. Well, I don't know what PACE is. I mean, everyone knows. If you don't know what PACE is and you're working in adoption, you need taking out and sending on a PACE course. You need Dan Hughes to give you a good sorting out. But I think that one of the solutions, again, is around the training of social care staff, that we've got to raise up awareness of the complexity of these children, which one of the key elements is that I think that what we're suggesting and recommending is when you go into a house and you know that there's a parent is saying this child is violent and aggressive, that you go in and you look and you think, what is going on? So one of the key things we looked at, we asked across all of the 500 app respondents and said, tell us about your child. You know, you are an expert of yourself and you're an expert of your child, but actually on a really basic level, does this child have a diagnosis? And all of the 536 respondents said my child either has or is in the process of getting a diagnosis in relation to their mental health, their whether they've got a learning disability, they're on the autistic spectrum disorder, ADHD, Asperger's, mild learning disability, dyslexia, dyspraxia. You're looking at FASD. You're looking at all of these children. You go, all right, okay, well, we're not talking about normal, whatever that means, children. We're children who've got have had either traumatic brain incidents, injuries, you know, or cognitive impairments, whether that's biological or through trauma. We're not, but often, probably like, you know, my children, or my daughter, who is sort of in that category, she can be really, really, really persuasive and really coherent. And actually, you need to be pretty switched on to know what's going on inside my... You need to get inside my child's inner workings and have an understanding of their internal working model, how they react in different situations, because often our children can be, you know, and they're lovely. But they can be lovely 1 minute and then be having a two-year-old tantrum the next. Yeah. So it's pushing parents and pushing professionals and saying, you need to go in there, you need to know your stuff, and you need to make really good assessments of the situation. Is it the one third of children who are just trying to get what they want through violence and aggression and coercion? Mm. Or is it this two thirds of children who are unraveling because of external or internal stimulation and they need support? You don't need to come in and then de-skill the parents. You know, tell your parents, you can't do this and you must do this. You need to work with parents. And that sense of collaboration, you've got to work with schools, police, healthcare, community nurses, anyone who will listen to you, and build a team around children. And that's one of the other key messages, is that you've got to build a team and you've got to be at the centre of that team and take control where possible. Yeah. But it's a wholly disempowering situation for so many families. And like you were saying, in the midst of all that, they've got their own troubles to deal with, haven't they?
Well, that's very true. Very interesting.
I mean, the report's out there, and it's 170 pages, and you can buy it on Amazon, but you can get the free summary, which is probably much more palatable.
You're charging for this?
Well, it's 180 pages. We're not just going to send them out in the post. I'm going to print them off in my little thing.
Well, I didn't mean quite that, but, you know, anyway, yeah.
Well,
there's a summary.
Well, we wanted it to be printable. We wanted it to be in a book version, and the only way we could do that is through Amazon. And Amazon actually set the price, which is what I didn't know.
Oh, really?
If you self-publish, you don't get the choice. If you want it in colour.
Is it £1,000 per copy?
Per copy, and I'll sign that and come round and do your windows. Sure.
I was going to say again.
No, it's 18.
You're doing a lot of window cleaning.
I am. Oh, well, there's many strings to my bow. It's £18 for the physical full version, or you can buy it on Kindle for a fiver, or you can get the extended summary, which is still about 4,000 words. For free. You can download it for free. Or I'll come round and chat to you if you want.
Where can you download it from?
You can go on to academia.edu, which is a website where academic papers are uploaded for free. You can get it from Amazon. The book is on Amazon. And you can, or if you follow links through my Facebook page or your Facebook page and that kind of stuff. I'm sure it's on. You haven't got a Facebook page, have you? Yes, you have.
I do. Yeah.
It's out there. You just have to type in my name and CPV, not CVAB.
No, don't type in CVAB. No, that's not what we're.
It'll get there. Not yet. It'll get there. I mean, there's loads more, but I know that it's quite dense.
It's like I say, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because we have spoken about it many times, but not in any massive great detail. And I know the first survey you did was very kind of light touch. So when you did the second survey, I think it was a little bit more kind of thorough, wasn't it?
Oh, I mean, there's stuff in there that is just shocking. And one of the things you could take any chapter and you could do a 2 or 3 hour presentation on it. One of the things I've got a slide of it when I do presentations, is in relation to violence with weapons between siblings. And this is really grim stuff. But you look at Professor Selwyn's Beyond the Adoption Order, and one of the key findings of that was parents can put up with crap They will keep going, and that is just amazing, until another child is at threat. And that's when things start to unravel massively, and that's when you get family breakdowns, and that's when you get social workers involved, because it becomes a child protection issue. And it becomes a domestic violence issue. When a 9-year-old is getting filled in by an 11-year-old or a 7-year-old, people go in and go, actually, this child is beyond parental control. Then you get into the whole Section 20, Section 17, Section 47 investigations. So it all starts to unravel pretty quickly once other children are hurt. So a really complex issue. And there's loads of meat on that, on the bone of that, of the report. So please, if you are interested, download. But it's been downloaded all over the world. It's amazing. Egypt, America.
Look at you, worldwide sensation.
I know, I'm world famous on the internet.
Yeah, you'll be getting invited to talk in Australia and New Zealand next.
New Zealand, nicely done. I see what you did there,
Scott.
I see what you did.
Little segue there.
You are on fire. Absolute fire. We got
it's only because I'm bored listening to you.
We got an email, didn't we, which is really exciting.
It was quite exciting. I was giddy. It was like, what's that? Listener number 4? I don't know.
Yeah. She's not related to anyone we know, is she?
Well, I don't have any... I do have relatives in New Zealand, actually. It's definitely not that. Anyway, so what did the email say, Al? Come on.
Well, the email was really interesting. Well, do you know what? I have a really vague memory of when I did my preparation course in 1998, that there was a video shown of New Zealand adoption, and it was in relation to contact with birth families. And it all disappeared, and it came back. So this email was from an adopter in New Zealand, and they were telling us a little bit about the New Zealand process, which actually there's, when children are adopted, there is a court order for contact when appropriate with birth families, which is in the vast majority of cases, that's what happens. And so this was quite a brief email, but it was sort of raising this possibility. So that was really exciting and really made me think. So we should, so we might get her on as a guest, mightn't we?
I think we should seek her out.
Well,
you know, I've got an interest in adoption in other countries anyway, and was quite involved in some of the stuff that was taken back to Australia, because they don't really do adoptions in Australia because of the kind of the Aborigines and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But they're starting to try and consider it more now. So, and if you remember, I was going to do that road trip in America, and it just didn't happen because they were all really boring and they didn't want to engage.
They probably looked at your Facebook profile and thought,
exactly, yeah.
There goes the neighbourhood.
Exactly. hopefully we'll get her on.
Yeah, but I looked and 14% of our listeners are from the good old US of A.
Woohoo!
But that's like more than 3.
Yeah. I was going to mention something about the current president.
No, don't. Let's not draw us onto the rocks of your political beliefs.
I know. It's not a belief. It's just fact.
Exactly. Your blood's up. We're not going to go
anywho,
there.
Anywho. So, I just wanted to... what else were we going to talk about?
Well, I have a little... I was wanting to ask you, because we were on the cusp of National Adoption Week. Come on then. Get it all off your chest.
Well, officially today, because this is released on the 13th of October, which is a Saturday.
Yeah, but it's actually the 10th.
It's also my birthday.
Hey!
When this release is my birthday, so I will be in Helsinki having a nice weekend away with my other half, just the two of us. Yes, next week is National Adoption Week, and it always falls at this time of year, so it's kind of I'm beginning actually not to like October for a number of reasons, October and the first week in November, for reasons which I've been quite public about this week.
Get it off your chest.
Why do I do these things to myself?
These public confessionals.
Those damn blog things. National Adoption Week is always a conflict. Always. One reason or another.
But is that not that we just... I mean, I feel it more profoundly than ever this year, and I'm not really sure why that is.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know. And it's not bitterness that I'm not nominated for an award. It's all bitterness. I'm just bitter. No, I just...
I mean, the awards aren't even part...
It's nothing to do with that.
If anything, the awards are a very different kettle of fish, because actually it's recognising those that are trying to make a difference. And do you know what? high five to that, because, you know, we both won awards through it. You've won one more than you should have done. But, you know, and you know, you see these new kind of names coming through. So, you know, there's kind of...
Yeah, more power to the elbow.
I was actually really disappointed and very surprised to see only two shortlisted for the Adoption Champion of the Year, which is obviously my category, which I took in 2016. Because two, that's, you know, there are more champions out there than that. So whether it's just because we've not had time to nominate or whatever, you know, that's disappointing. But the other side of National Adoption Week is the kind of, for me anyway, it's still focused on recruitment. And whilst I know we need new adopters and new families coming through, we need to fix the back end before we can get people in the front end. And I don't know how many times I have to sit in varying places and say exactly that. Until you've sorted out the back end, you're always going to have an issue with the front end. Now, I wouldn't change my life for £1 million. Well, maybe a million. Yeah, probably.
Some bits of it.
I wouldn't change my life for very much. Yeah. Because I love all of my kids, and
that goes without saying.
I got them, but it's just that message, isn't it? You know, because actually, even last year it was adoption support, wasn't it?
But I don't. It's not filtering through. I mean, I've been in different situations recently, and I've just increasingly see that that we're consumed with this systemic change that we're doing. I know that, you know, I can say what I want because I'm not employed by anyone.
No, because nobody will have you.
That's mainly. But I just think actually it feels more overt than ever that the focus is on getting people through the door. And it's not working, though, is it?
No, it's not. You and I have both sat in meetings where we've said, stop advertising the back of buses, stop advertising as, you know, it pays this much, or it does this, or it does that. You know, effectively, and I'm sorry, I'm going to bang on about this, until you fix that adoption support piece, the recruitment's always going to be an issue, because you have you have positive people who want to become parents picking up on all the negatives. Now, the negatives are real life. Don't get me wrong, and like I've just said, I wouldn't change my life for the world. You know, I have my three wonderful, amazing boys. However, that if one person read something negative that I have to say on a Sunday in the afternoon when I've had a late night and then that's what they're picking up on. They're not picking on the other 3% of the time when everything's all right. No, I'm joking, not 3%, but you know what I'm saying. And that's what they're picking up on. They're picking up on the negatives. And there aren't enough positive stories, because we never go, yay, you know, my child did this and my child did that. We always just go for the negatives.
I'm not sure, because we've been doing the adopter stories thing and the foster care stories, and I think I've really enjoyed them and they've been really well received, so thank you for listening. But it was interesting how people filter what is said, and then we come back to this all the time, the same thing that in preparation groups people hear what they want to hear. The first one that came out was Claire's, and somewhat, you know, different people have had very different responses to them, and we've got the feedback from that. Mm-hmm. And people are saying, oh, that's a wholly negative view. Yeah. And other people going, oh, that's a wholly realistic view. And other people going, that sounds really quite an upbeat view. And you go, right.
Yeah.
So... people bring they bring their own perspectives to the party, don't they, and read it however we want. And I don't know, I just think it's more complex than ever. And I was at a conference, did I mention this, a little conference that was held by a birth parent who had her children removed. That's the right word. And she told her story. And they're complicated stories, and they're, you know, you've got to listen cautiously. However, there was undoubtedly some unquestionable injustice.
Yeah.
And concerning ethical choices, and you go when that's happening, then it wobbles every adopter, doesn't it? It makes us all go ooh, and increasingly you know. There comes a moment, I think every adopter has this moment, who has any sort of challenge in their child's life, and they try and contact post-adoption support. And often what you see is that is this like an epiphany? And I remember it happening to me where you go, actually, I'm having a real challenge with social work and social care. And it's not often, it's not personalities. Often it's a system. It's a challenge with a system. And then you go, so that makes me reframe the experience of my children and their parents in this system, because I'm getting all kinds of challenge and I've got lots of things in my favour that my children's parents didn't. And it makes you think, is there a different narrative? Is there a different story? Is that, would this, could this have turned out a different way? I don't know. I'm slightly worried about myself because I think that I'm becoming quite belligerent about the whole thing.
I think you are.
Yeah. And I keep having, I know I'm having a belligerent 48th year. And I just think, we are not fixing anything. Are we just back round at 2014? Are we back round at 2013?
Yeah.
Is adoption, is support slipping off the agenda again? Are we just going to be going to this wilderness again until 2025, 28, 29, 30, when another minister comes along who says, actually, I've got a real passion and a lived experience and I want to see something different done?
Yeah.
Because we're consumed with other things. And for us adopters, foster carers, kinship carers, it's a concern. I feel like that's a really wholly miserable rant.
Yeah,
from
you've
me.
Gone deep and meaningful. And I'm going to be honest, it's not very nice.
Should I tell you that story about when I swore at that conference?
Yeah, because we're going to talk about that as well, weren't we, very quickly. But yeah, go on.
Go on, you went to a conference. Tell me where you went, Scott.
I did. I'm actually verbalising me away on Saturday.
If you could come out and tell us.
Yeah, I know, yeah. I'm coming up. I was at the Home for Good annual summit in Milton Keynes on Saturday.
Phil Green, friend of the show.
Yeah, friend of the show, and some other lovely, amazing people, actually, I have to say. They're just human beings after all, aren't they? You know, just because they're Christian. But it was just, it was such an eye-opening experience for me for reasons that I've blogged about this week. Probably my most read blog ever in 2 days.
Where do we find your blog? What's it called?
You can find my blog on gayadoptiondad.com.
Excellent.
Or on that blogspot site and type in Gay Adoption Dad. Anyway, it's called You Gotta Have Faith, in the words of George Michael. Because you know me, I can't do anything serious. I always have to use humour.
I know.
Anyway,
it's
a
deflection.
I was there. I was there for Adoption UK and I was on stage and I met some actually, do you know what? I did meet a lot of amazing people who came and spoke to me and some of them knew who I was, some of them didn't. They didn't really care, you know, in terms of I was a human at the end of the day. I'm not going to talk about the blog because the blog explains it all really, but it really did open my eyes to just the way my mind was up until a few weeks ago.
All right.
Terms of faith and belief.
Lots to ponder there, lots to think
about.
Yeah,
there was. That's why I'm not going to talk about it.
But it's worth noting that when I first set off on this journey of adopt, I was told quite reliably that at least one third of people who adopt have a faith.
Mm.
And that that does interplay into their reasons for fostering and adopting. It's a big part of it. I know that that's not just Christian, that's Islam, it's all kinds of people have, you know, and so really interesting. So I was invited to go to their conference a long, long time ago. And and I was given 5 minutes on challenging behaviour. And I took nine, and they had to drag me off the stage.
Did they have a hook?
Huge hook. Yeah, no, and I really enjoyed myself. But it was fantastic because I've been through the church stuff, and I have this secret yearning desire to do a podcast just about faith, but like go out and interview lots of different people. And I've actually interviewed lots of people. I've got it's all on my computer, and one day I'm going to put it out there. My thoughts on, because I think it's really interesting. There's lots of questions I have, good and bad, in relation to, because I think it can bring a whole load of troubles, but it can also bring a whole load of positives for resilience and community and stuff. So I think it's not a black and white issue. None of this stuff's black and white, is it?
No,
it's not. Anyway, and I said prick from the main stage, and
that's why. I did.
I said, we're talking about challenging behaviour, and I said, well, you know, my daughter calls me a prick. And there was a moment there where I thought, like, the heavens opened and God said, stop it. that's enough.
So is that a male God? Is that what you're telling me?
No.
Or is that a completely different discussion?
Well, that is, from a theological point of view, you could argue that God is neither male nor female, and that we...
Well, if
you're saying that we're created in God's image, male and female, you'd say that God is both, wouldn't you? You could argue that God is both.
Well, you know, that's just, you know, I'm not even that far into it now.
There you go.
I'm very much at the early stages of even thinking about it, so please let's not go into the finer detail. So what you're really saying is that God is non-binary, yeah?
I'm not going to be quoted on that. You do realise that I can see our podcast figures are just dropping dramatically.
No, I don't think so. I think that people listen to us because they enjoy it rather than anything about faith. But it's just been a really interesting couple of weeks when it comes to that sort of thing.
Yes, very much so.
Read my blog.
Yes, read your blog. It's a very good blog. It's World Mental Health Day today, and I was thinking of writing a really confessional blog with no vagueness in it about my mental health.
Yeah.
But I couldn't be bothered. Yeah. So there you go. That's my best story today.
Well,
isn't
I actually, it's, that is really interesting, actually, because I shared my blog from, I don't know if you remember, a couple of years ago, I went to that. What's his name? The Duke of Cambridge thing.
Yes.
Kind of
yeah.
Passed together, if you remember that. And I wrote a really heavy blog after that, actually.
You did, yes.
My kind of affairs of heart. And I retweeted it today because it was my late brother's birthday. And he would have been so, hence the reason there's all this. There's a lot of celebration because I celebrated 4 years at Adoption UK on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
It was my brother's 40th, but he's no longer with us. Birthday coming up. Right now it's 3 days away, but as people listen, it will have happened. And then obviously the anniversary of my dad's death in a couple of weeks, and it's kind of all linked together.
It's a bit of a rough few weeks, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it is, but it's not, if you know what I mean, because, you know, it's just stuff that's happened. You know, you learn to live with it, don't you? Even though.
Yeah.
It's just been a really, really interesting day to day with the mental health stuff, because actually every day is mental health day, as far as I'm concerned. And again, you know, that is my second most read blog is on mental health, and you know, just some of the comments I get from people, and actually, fact, because someone commented on it today, I went in and had a look at the comment, and you'd even left a comment, you'd read it about, I don't know, 8-9 months after I posted it, and said, and I hadn't even seen that, so
I can't even remember reading it. I try not to read.
But
your
you
blogs.
Actually said that you were glad that you had read it. You actually answered a lot of questions as to why I was so beyond help, so
something like that.
Yeah, something like that. No, I'm joking. But yeah, it's been I think it's the time of year as well, isn't it, where we're going into the darker nights, and you know, the weather's getting, well, not today, but you know, generally the weather's,
it's a tricky
warm.
Time isn't it,
but
it can be a tricky time.
It is, because, you know, and that's what I always get concerned about, is people who might be in that space where they're not able to cope with it as well as others, and it's not just a state of mind. It's a real problem. So, you know, and
it's a real,
you know,
thing.
I'm going to refer to Ben Ashcroft, who's been you know, tweeting his journey through his mental health problems. You know, he has got a diagnosis this week, and
right.
I know that a lot of people are saying, you know, that doesn't define you, and they're right, it doesn't define him. However, having a diagnosis, you can learn a lot about your mental health because you know how to deal with it. And, you know, from my perspective, as someone who's lost someone to suicide, he didn't have a diagnosis, so he wasn't able to learn about what he needed to do for himself, as well as what else he needed from, you know, mental health practitioners and stuff like that. So whilst, yes, you know, I've spoken to Ben at length about it, and he's made this very public, so I'm not saying I shouldn't, but, you know, from that perspective, you do need, it's not just a label, it's a diagnosis, to be able to say, actually, do you know what, this is how I deal with this problem. And, you know, everybody should talk about their own mental health.
It was funny because I was thinking about it today, and there was, I think, one of the hashtags was share your story, and I thought, well, I've got kind of, I'm one of these people that tick along. But actually, there's been times when I've really struggled, and that was related to my adoption experience. And I can remember there was a day when, at the very worst of it, when we were caught up in a huge court case, and I tend not to say very much about our story because I think it's boring, but we were caught up in a huge court case, and we went through years of violence and literally years, and we lost the children, we got them back, really complicated. And I remember one day I thought, the next person that talks to me, I'm going to literally just unravel. Like, I remember shaking, and I thought, if anyone asks me, even if it's like, what colour's the sky, I am on the very cusp of falling to pieces. And it being really frightening, because that loss of control, and I am a control freak. So,
you are.
I am. You know that from experience. But I just remember thinking, I don't know where to go from here, because I've got five children at home, I've got a wife, I've got responsibilities, and I am on the very cusp of just unravelling here. And I can't remember what happened, but that was in weeks of me leaving work, and because I thought I've got to do something, and I was in a position where I could do that, and I have the sense of agency, and you know, the whatever, I have the psychology that I can kind of go, well, stuff it.
Yeah.
But I'm lucky that I have people around me who saw that and caught me. So I don't need to write a blog now. That's it. It's out in there. I've said it. But I think that, you know, when I do see people talk about their mental health, I see, you know, a lot of, there was a blog I read about an adoptive parent who was gone to the doctors and was on medication for their, you know, anxiety and depression.
Yeah.
In relation to CPVA, see what I did there?
Yeah, you did, yeah.
Yes.
Like, we're back into that.
Boom, I'm on fire, yeah. But that, you know, that is stuff that where we, parents are unwell, and that was one of the findings that a lot of people said, I'm unwell. I'm on I'm on pills. I'm not the woman, or I'm not the man I was, and living with this is killing me.
Yeah.
Oh, this is such a miserable
beat. So, just to recap, really, on the evening. So, before we go, we have been doing this for 2 years now.
Way!
I can't believe we've been doing it for 2 years, actually, because in some ways, I just remembered that kind of after the first 6 months and then before the 18-month mark, it's like, how do we squeeze all this in? I just don't know how we do it. But obviously, I don't do it. I just turn up.
You are the talent.
My hair, put my posh voice on. Put my posh telephone voice on. And chatter, but a lot more goes into it than just that. And you know, but it's been a really good two years, and you know, I'm really pleased with some of the kind of interviews and stuff we've done.
Well, I think we do hit purple patches. We have, you know, we have some great guests, and I think that
we do.
The aspiration was always to provide something that people couldn't get. People who are perhaps on the fringes, and I think we do that. And you know, they do probably get more banter. Most people have stopped doing the ironing by now, and are kind of the podcast is just playing on in their machine somewhere while they've gone to sleep.
Yeah, and they're not even listening.
No.
Yeah. Is exactly.
It, hello. Hello. Wake up.
We should do a quiz at this point, shouldn't we? Where we offer something for free that's really like expensive. See how many people actually do it.
That's good.
So,
but I have to say, we've got. Thank you for everyone who's put a review on iTunes, because that's really encouraging, and they're all wholly positive, apart from a few technical ones in the early years.
Yeah.
Thank you for everyone who's signed up to our
Facebook
page. To be
fair, the technical stuff we can't help.
No, well,
we can't help the technical thing.
Because we're dim.
Yeah, exactly. And Facebook page quotes, seriously. Oh, for our 200th liker, Scott will come running in your windows.
Yeah.
That backfired on you, didn't it, matey?
Well, I know where Caroline Daly lives, so next time you come up, I'm going to check you there.
She's got gin. I'm all right. Fine.
Jobs are good.
Clean the windows with gin.
Job is a good one. Hey, well, we're on an hour, so shall we nick off and do something?
Yeah.
Next week,
I've got to go and celebrate my birthday.
Way! And will I see you on Tuesday next week?
You will.
Way.
I don't know what we're going to do, actually.
No,
we've been back doing a podcast, so I'll do that.
Yeah, so we'll do nothing untoward. But we are probably going to kind of meet up with some bloggers, aren't we? So that maybe get them to speak. We get to maybe interviews. Yeah. So hopefully we'll meet up with Blog Fox and Scarlett Levy, is it?
Yeah. Yeah, and hopefully we'll meet some others as well. I know the CEO of Adoption UK is going, so you may be able to catch a few words with her. And yeah, there's I think it's really interesting these ones because there's quite a few interesting folk going, and we will try and catch them outside because we're not allowed to do this inside.
Although you're causing trouble.
Facebook Live, like we did last year.
You're causing trouble. You'll get yourself kicked out.
I'm not causing any trouble.
You will.
Because last year we did Suddenly Mummy, who hasn't been, I don't even think she was nominated this year.
Which is a shame on the whole country.
Our blogs are just fantastic. So I'm not sure whether she'll be there. I very much doubt she will be, because obviously she's in the process of Planned of Eden, isn't she? But last year, do you remember we caught John Simmons just off the cuff? And that was very funny.
Yes.
And I do like John, because he's just one of those lovely guys.
Oh, he's lovely, isn't he?
So hopefully we'll bring you a few things like that. And it'll be interesting to see who's presenting and who's hosting this year as well.
Oh, yes.
It might be our friend. What's her name?
Claire Grogan.
Of Gregory's Girl. Yeah, Claire Grogan. We like Claire Grogan. She likes a bit of banter, doesn't she?
A bit of bants.
She likes a bit of bants.
A bit of bants.
I bet she listens to this. It's just that she doesn't make it public, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
I don't blame her.
On that note.
Yeah. Right, Slingy Rook, and I shall see you, and have a good weekend. Have a good week in Helsinki. What are you going to do in Helsinki? Oh, don't tell me that. I don't
weekend
know.
In Helsinki. Well, apparently there's a good chance we'll see the Northern Lights, so that's something off my bucket list.
I'm so jealous.
I keep taking all these things off my bucket list, which means I must be closer to death. So it's just...
that is a conclusion you could draw. And on that note, it's been lovely to see you. Don't die on the way to Helsinki.
I'll try not to.
It took me...
Or Singapore.
Excellent. Goodbye. Right, goodbye.
Bye.
Stupid. Okay.
Sorry. Stick my teeth back in. In this episode, we hear from Emma, who with her husband Blair has been fostering for nearly 20 years.
That was boring. Do a bit of pep.
I know. It was, even when I was saying it, because I was trying to think what I was saying.
So. Yeah, I could tell. And don't worry.
In this episode, we...
pass him his fags.
Oh, that mute button is handy.
I'll tell you.
I want to hear that.
Oh.
So do you want it to sound jovial?
No, but upbeat, not like doer. So you want this episode, Emma wants to, or Emma tells her story, whatever.
Yeah, I know what I'm saying.
Okay,
just
fine.
In the right way. Just tell me what to do.
Just,
right.
Just say lots of them, and then we'll pick one that sounds human.
Okay. In this episode, we talk to Emma.
Okay.
Well, it's because you're asking me to do this, and I don't like doing it. If you said to me, record some sh** and send it through to me, then I would.
That's exactly what I'd have got.
No, you wouldn't have. Right, okay. In this episode, we talked to Emma, a foster carer of nearly 20 years. No. You can bleep that and put it on the bloody outtakes. I don't care. right. In this episode, we talked to Emma, who, along with her husband Blair, has been fostering for nearly 20 years.
Boom. In one. P for professional.
Oh, yeah.
Podcast gold. Podcast gold.
I tell ya.
I tell ya.
I should be paid.
Excellent. And could you do another one?